The still vibrant Doobie Brothers cranking it out there with Eyes of Silver from an album called What Were Once Vices Are Now Habits. We're talking with the Nano Man, Chris Cooper, and filmmaker Jeremy Corbell about advanced propulsion systems, the possibility of interstellar travel, and some of these topics invariably swerve pretty close to the subjects that we're used to talking about on this program: UFOs, strange things in the sky, extraterrestrials, other intelligences, other realities. In a moment, we pick up our conversation about this strange quantum field theory that Chris Cooper has been exploring, how it could be put to practical use. And then we're going to come back to the utility fog, this very strange nanomaterial that he found under some unusual circumstances. See if we can get him to tell that story, and a lot more to cover here on Coast to Coast AM. Chris Cooper, in the last segment, you were telling me about this, the ultimate possibilities if the space drive could sort of be developed on a mass scale. Obviously, there are applications for the development of space, commercial development of space. It eliminates a lot of the barriers and the cost for that. You said we could go to Mars in like 3 days, so interplanetary travel would certainly be possible. What about interstellar travel, though? Do we need something more exotic than the space drive system you're talking about to travel a distance that far to another star system?
No, I believe it's just a matter of systems integration. We've got cold fusion. We've got the extremely strong, durable materials needed for actually building a spacecraft. And we've got a propulsion system that could take passengers and cargo between stars.
How long, though? How long does to the nearest star, how long does that take? If Mars is 3 days, it would seem like it'd take a long time.
Mars with classic propulsion is a two-year trip currently. So to cut 2 years to 2 days, and the fact that we are doing serious modifications to the underlying quantum field itself would mean that travelers may not experience the same sort of space-time distortion that Einstein speaks of when you approach the speed of light. Imagine digging a tunnel from here to Alpha Centauri and then traveling through that tunnel instead of a trip using classic propulsion. So a trip from here to Alpha Centauri may be a few months.
Well, certainly much more doable. Let me ask you this. You have been quoted by Jeremy in some of his films as saying, you know, humans could become, in effect, extraterrestrials. What I don't have a sense of is how comfortable you are in talking about some of the sort of the more classic applications of that term, the kinds of stuff that we cover on this program all the time. But I'll ask Jeremy that question first. Jeremy, you've had conversations. You got to know Chris really well. Is there a concern that he wants to be hands-off with some of the more exotic options there because he wants to be taken seriously among colleagues, or how do you see it?
I mean, you know, Chris is a pretty fearless person. I've never noticed him to shy away from the infinite possibilities that are there. I think that, you know, tell me if I'm wrong, Chris, but a lot of what, you know, he's derived inspiration from are, you know, these things that seem to defy our known physics. I mean, I think that he's very open to that stuff. You know, he, like us, you know, we have big questions about it. But for example, I brought Chris a piece of the alleged implant that was in patient 17, and Chris helped me read through the isotopic composition of object number 17. And we sat there together, and the zinc 64 was off by over 1%. I mean, Chris was saying to me at the time, "This is astounding. I mean, this zinc is non-terrestrial. It was not formed in our supernova, and you found it in a person?" So it's things like this that we've experienced together where I've seen Chris has a very open mind about it. And quite frankly, Chris, I mean, it seemed like to me when we first started documenting together I mean, man, if you weren't building a spaceship, man, I mean, it was like from the material science to the cold fusion. I mean, isn't it part of your idea that one day humanity could travel amongst the stars? And what you're working with is precisely going towards that, you know, building some sort of spaceship to take humanity off planet.
That is absolutely my ultimate goal. And all of these technologies is the ultimate survival of our species and survival of the life of this planet, and to secure our future. It is absolutely my goal to take us off planet and to explore the rest of the galaxy, not from a observatory, but boots on the ground.
And are you inspired by some of the kinds of exotic subjects that we discuss on this program from time to time? Think strange things seen in the sky, stories about UFOs, some other intelligence, aliens?
I am certainly inspired by the possibility that others have come before us.
And you've seen some things, Chris, that you can't explain. I mean, you tasked me with you know, doing an SEM on a substance which you could not explain, and you know, these nanomachines, these microbots. I mean, all of this stuff seems to play some sort of role in your mentality of your current day physics and the hardcore science that you're doing now.
Utility fog.
Right. When you see some of these materials, it defies explanation, at least any classic explanation, as to the origin of these materials.
Well, let's talk about the utility fog. And I don't know if Jeremy came up with that name or that was the name you told him about. I don't know if you can describe in any detail how you got it, or I'll leave it up to you how much you want to say.
I wish I could take credit for the term utility fog, but unfortunately I can't. The term was coined many years ago at a nanotechnology conference in 1994. And at that time, it was a theoretical construct that with advanced nanotechnology, nanomachines could be built on the scale of devices and machines built on a scale that would require a microscope even to see them. And in a large swarm, they could all link together and act as a united device with millions of microscopic parts. This theoretical construct of utility fog is something that, as far as I know, we are decades, if not centuries, away from actually making some of these exotic materials, although there's nothing theoretically in physics or chemistry that would preclude us from eventually designing machines on that scale.
George.
So the sample that you have a sample.
Yeah,
and you got it analyzed. Go ahead, Jeremy.
You know, that was one of the most astounding moments for me, like, as a filmmaker. I mean, you know, there's Chris. I'm filming a space drive, and he's like, well, you know, I do have a substance which, you know, totally defies anything that I know. It's something we aspire to in nanotechnology, and, you know, do you want to see it? And I was like, yeah, sure. He goes upstairs, comes back down, brings a vial of what looked like water to me and shows it to me. I'm like, Chris, what is this? And he's like, inside of this vial, inside of this liquid, is trillions and trillions of you know, made nanotechnological robots. And I'm like, well, what are you talking about? And you see this in my film. He brings out this image that he personally did the SEM for, you know, 10 years prior or 9 years prior to showing it to me. And he's showing me, and again, you see this in the film, there's like these tiny little structures like graspers and clampers. I mean, this is what he's seeing. And I, you know, I'm just like, is he serious? And you know, he shows me all of these images, which were really astounding, and basically tasked me with going to replicate those images at NASA. And sure enough, they were in there. We just had to change the beam parameters, which is wild. You know, we looked all day, couldn't find anything but clusters. So this was my first experience in kind of seeing through Chris's eyes of these nanobots inside of this liquid. And Chris, maybe you can kind of tell us, you know, what you think, you know, you're seeing here. I mean, technology that we can't make at this time.
The devices in this suspension of ethanol, that looks like a little gray dust suspended in the ethanol, when analyzed with a scanning electron microscope. An electron microscope, you see these sort of blobs that don't look like any much of anything, but perhaps dust. And increase the beam energy, and what emerges are these an amazing array of what would appear to be microscopic gears made on the nanoscale, and these gears form into devices, graspers, manipulators, etc. And although it's very difficult to identify a particular image, you scan across the sample and you take image after image and start to find the exact same structure, interchangeable parts. And when you start to see interchangeable parts that are very complex, highly engineered, microscopic devices, that is what really got my attention.
And you
no way this could be natural.
Natural biological say calcification of materials, microbes, life as we know it doesn't build nanostructures out of titanium.
And that's what it's made of, titanium, these little things?
Yes.
And you showed it to people at NIST, is that right, Chris?
Yes. I didn't show the images. I simply gave my friends at NIST, National Institute of Standards and Technology, outside of Washington, D.C., a sample of this material. They were doing work for us, doing imaging work and characterization work for us with the carbon nanotube water filters. So I decided to just include this material as a sample. Didn't tell them anything about it. I got a call from the director at that time, a call from the director of the microelectronics group at NIST, just absolutely astounded about this particular sample, asked me a ton of questions. Where did it come from? We've never seen anything like this before. What is this? Where did you get it from? It doesn't fit anything that we've ever seen.
Did you tell them where you got it?
No. I wanted to preserve our relationship.
Because, well, it's, I'll just put you on the spot. I'll ask you. I understand that you have some reticence about what you're going to say. So I'll just ask you what you can say about how you got it, and we'll leave it at that.
I received this material from a site that has been associated with the phenomena that many of your speakers do talk about on your show. And to preserve the scientific rigor and integrity of this. For not to say exactly where it came from, hoping that materials like this will continue to be studied by other serious scientists.
So basically you're saying it came from sort of unusual circumstances, some of the kinds of things, the exotic sort of topics that we cover.
Yeah, I mean, I don't need to dance around about it. I mean, it's a high activity site for, you know, UFOs or that kind of experience. You know, as we know from Jacques Vallée's great work, who will be speaking very soon, very exciting, that at landing sites, for example, or in crop circles, there are oftentimes, you know, metallic you know, discharges or dust that is left over. And, you know, this is one of those high activity sites. And, you know, Chris was able to get a number of samples from a number of locations of this type of stuff that really seems to defy our known nanotechnology. So I think that's the most we should say about it until we get more and more tests.
Has anyone else ever come up with another sample of it, Chris, that you know of?
This particular material I have never seen referred to in the literature, and through my various contacts, it's so far it's been unique.
Let me ask you this. Again, you are on the, I'm describing you as being on the cutting edge of nanotechnology. If somebody in the world were able to make this stuff out of titanium, small nanobots, interchangeable parts, you would know about it.
I would know about it, unless somebody or a group. This would take an extraordinarily large effort, with more money than I can imagine to undertake this particular technological achievement. It's like finding an iPad that the ancient Greeks built in total secrecy.
Let's say you could master this technology, that tomorrow you could duplicate these little nanobots that you found in the utility fog. What could you do with them?
They would have great utility. The spectrum of capability, from disaster relief, being able to uncover people from rubble after an earthquake, the ability of these nanomachinery to go in and repair arteries, perform surgeries. The material could be used for cleaning engine parts, for repairing delicate instrumentation. The utility of this material is again the limit of your imagination.
We had a program that I hosted a week ago tonight on AI, artificial intelligence, and its emergence and ways it could go, and there are people in the field, including probably your field, that worry about AI, possibilities of nanotechnology for all its promise, that there are perils that come with it. There's a term that that has been used in the field about gray goo, where the nanobots start becoming self-replicating. They see humans as a threat, or we're no longer necessary, and the whole planet ends up being covered with a thick layer of nanobots that effectively form gray goo. What's your take on that?
Yes, the theories abound about the possible hazards of nanotechnology, and from what I've seen in terms of our classic development path toward this level of nanotechnology, would be capable of giving us a real gray goo scenario. I personally think we're still centuries away from developing that technology. These materials, these micro nano robotics, even carbon nanotubes have to be synthesized in extreme temperatures under incredibly well-controlled conditions. A computer chip has to be built in under incredibly exacting conditions using physical, chemical vapor deposition and all
of these. Okay, I'm going to interrupt you there, Chris Cooper, Nano Man. Sorry to interrupt at that moment. The music tells us we need to take a break. We'll be back with more of Chris Cooper and Jeremy Corbell right after this. And Paul Simon takes us into the break. When the Beatles, at long last, added their entire catalog of music to music streaming services a couple of weeks ago, you may have read about it. This is the song that emerged as the most downloaded Come Together. Great song, but a little bit of a surprise since there were others that were much bigger hits. Great song, though. Sounds as good as today as when it came out on Abbey Road. It is a night for surprises. We just heard from our guest, Nano Man Chris Cooper, and from Jeremy Corbell about the site of what we'd call anomalous activity. A substance, a sample of this substance, was discovered that they called utility fog. And inside of this liquid container, according to multiple tests, were these tiny little nanobots, small manufactured structures, seemed to be interchangeable parts for some kind of a purpose that we don't understand. And they're made out of titanium. Hundreds, tens of years, at least maybe hundreds of years ahead of any known Earth technology. We also heard about a space drive system based on an understanding of a quantum field, exotic materials that would allow humans to not only travel between planets, but between stars. But there's one other breakthrough we're going to touch on when we come back, and that is cold fusion. And we're going to hear a sample of audio from the moment this breakthrough was made. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. I want to take one more stab before we leave this utility fog question, one more sort of a stab at getting a little bit more information about the circumstances of how it was obtained, because I think that this is what people are going to remember about this program, is this strange material that seems to defy rational explanation. Jeremy, you've seen the pictures. We've both seen those pictures, the images that you brought back from the lab. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I mean, it's ultimately fascinating. Like, whatever this is, I didn't even believe there was going to be anything in it when I did the scanning electron microscope work. And sure enough, we were able to image exactly what Chris imaged 10 years ago. And, you know, I'm really going to put Chris on the line here. You know, we decided to go boldly into this and to tell the truth, and even if it's strange and we can't totally explain it, I think that our testimony is real important. And one of the things that I believe led Chris into imagining and understanding the capabilities of something like these micro machines was a personal experience that he had just as a scientist, kind of on a vacation to go look into a very strange phenomenon, which I'm not as familiar with, but I know you are, George. And I was hoping, Chris, that we might be able to get the personal account of how you got kind of mentally turned on to the idea that this utility fog might be used by a hyper or super intelligence to actually manipulate matter. Would you be willing to talk a little bit about your personal experience that is really amazing, I have to say?
Yes. So, Science News published a article, prestigious journal, with a crop circle on the front cover of Science News, and I think the title was something like "Unknown Geometry Discovered in Crop Circles." So I had a mild fascination with these appearances of these amazing formations and crops, primarily in southern England. In 2004, I had an opportunity to spend several weeks in the fields, and one afternoon, as I was studying a formation, walking through a crop of wheat, suddenly I was in the middle of of a field that was actively having a crop circle form, and it was forming around me with nothing I'd ever seen before. It would appear that the crops, the wheat, the plants were simply laying down in a geometric pattern with some unknown force. They were sort of just laying themselves down, and the only explanation for me was that the plants had to have been laid down with something that could really address the individual plants, and in this particular case, weave them together in very complex patterns. And if that something was utility fog would certainly have potential of doing what I saw happening all around me this particular afternoon in the middle of the summer in southern England. And so that certainly intensified my interest in understanding the nature of some of this.
Wow, I mean that's huge. I don't recall anyone ever saying that they were in one of those circles when it formed. Could you feel anything? Could you? I mean, these, if it was utility fog or nanobots that were forcing the plants that way, was there any kind of a reaction on your skin or your body?
Sure, I felt a little tingling in the air. It was shocking. Not just the tingling, but the whole general experience. I was not alone. There were six other people in this particular formation with me, and they were all just absolutely stunned by this display.
Well, that's like a life-changing experience, isn't it?
Certainly makes one rethink one's premises in terms of what's possible.
The funny part about that was, you know, when Chris was telling me about this, he was like, yeah, there was this tour guide that had us out there, and it was his job to, like, show the circles, and he was talking like he knew everything about it, and he said it looked like the guy soiled himself because he never expected for it to be real, for it to actually form around him. So even the tour guide was speechless about what he saw. I thought that was so funny.
It occurs to me that maybe you were, it happened because you were there. I mean, that they wanted it to somebody who experienced it, who can get it and put it to use almost. It's such a coincidence that it happened while a nanophysicist is the guy that's standing in the formation.
And someone with carbon nanotube filters would be capable of actually capturing some of this material.
That's another pretty big coincidence.
The tour guide was very surprised. I would say, out of all of the crop circles that I'd seen over 2 weeks, most of them could easily be explained by people with boards and ropes, and I even met a couple of the folks who actually made some of these formations. A lot of them are man-made, but some of them are not man-made.
Sure, the ones that I've been over there as well, and I've seen been in the formations that are obviously the plants are bent, they're broken, but some of them are weaved. It's as if it somehow was weaved, and I know there's been speculation that maybe it's microwave that sort of heats the plants at the stems. That's explanation has kind of gone away. Some kind of an energy that we did not understand that makes the ones that are weaved, because you don't do that with a board and your foot.
And the formation that happened around me was not made with boards and ropes. That formation and others I intensified my study of the actual plants, and I found at the nodes of the plants inside the formation what looked like microscopic burn marks. I coined it nanopyrotechnics. Look like little micro explosions cause the nodes to explode in a very programmed way. And occasionally there were misfires where you'd see sort of a microscopic burn mark along the shaft of the plant between the nodes. And outside the crop circle, wouldn't see any of this phenomena, the microscopic burn marks. So if it is utility fog, these micro robots could certainly
accomplish that. Well,
very exacting damage to the plant to cause them to lay down.
Let me ask you this, Chris. You know, some of the designs that, you know, it used to be just circles, and then they became more complex over the years, and obviously humans are doing some of them, maybe a lot of them, maybe nearly all of them. But some of the more interesting ones, they have these mathematical connections. I hope I'm pronouncing this right, but I remember one from some years ago, a Mandelbrot kind of a design. And so many of the most interesting ones have these sort of exotic, advanced mathematical components to them, or am I overstating it?
Yes, they certainly have. There's a lot of mathematics embedded in these geometries. And from some of the crop circle makers that I met, they have whole groups that will try to figure out very complex geometries. It's become quite an art form. The ones that really interested me were the ones that were really off the beaten path, where you'd have to hike a couple miles in on farmer's land. I would always ask the farmer for permission, obviously, and go out on a hike to find some of these circles that no one even knew about. And these were the most interesting. You look at the lay of the land, for instance. Maybe there was a slope to the land, and the circle would be misformed, not quite round. Project that circle onto a flat plane, and it's suddenly a perfect circle. So whoever made it was able to have a perfect understanding for the topology of the land in order to map that topology into the circle. So the only way to really see the true geometry would be to remap that geometry onto a flat plane. These complexities, just not...
That's not a prankster.
I don't even think it's possible to do with ropes and boards.
So what's your general take on it, or do you have one? Do you think it's an effort at communication? Is it maybe art? Is it graffiti by some other intelligence? What's going on there?
I have no idea who, what, where, or how, but certainly a display of intelligence. These things are made, and we maybe even have some clues as to how they're made. The picks and shovels, this utility fog, if you will. Who's behind it? I have no idea. That's the mystery.
Jeremy, for you as a filmmaker, that's a challenge for you. You're making you want to, I guess, have a degree of separation between the wildest stuff, even though Chris has been willing today tonight to share this with us at considerable risk, I would say. You have to put it in categories, I guess, as you're making films about his work.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'll take it on. The thing with Chris is that he's, the most honest person I've ever met. He just says it as it is. If he doesn't know it, he doesn't know it. I mean, there's this awesome story. I don't know if it's classified or he has the privilege to talk about, but it was about weaponry, and he had to go to Los Alamos to kind of talk about it because he overheard some stuff. I mean, this is a guy who has a real strong moral compass. Now, when he tells me these extraordinary stories, I mean, every time I look into them, there is substance, just like with the utility fog. So if it's coming from Chris, I'm willing to investigate it. It's normally outside of my scope or my realm of what I look into, but so was the implant technology that Dr. Lear alleged. And I was sure enough, I got fascinated by it. So if there's an element of truth, and I know I'm in good hands with a scientist like Chris, I will look into it.
Well, here's the thing, Chris, is that now that you have shared this story, it opens up a whole new realm of possible research by folks who are earnestly trying to get to the bottom of the crop formation mystery, the agroglyphs. This could give them new tools to approach that work. I mean, they're chasing around these old barflies who go out with boards or crazy college kids who want to mystify farmers and create a media stir, but there is a legitimate chance for straightforward research if the folks have the right gear and the right approach, don't you think?
Certainly, there's a lot more to this story than just college kids with nothing to do.
And Chris, didn't you say that when you observed this, which I wish, oh my gosh, I wish I'd seen anything like this, but if, when you observed it, was there a shimmering in the air, if I remember it correctly, the story?
Yes. And a shimmering in the air would be consistent with the concept of a utility fog type of material at work.
Can you have you given thought to how this stuff is projected and from where? I mean, is it I think the people on this program would think, aha, there must be an alien spaceship hovering above and they projected it down somehow or some kind of an orbiting platform, but I guess it doesn't necessarily have to come from something like that. How else could it?
No, there's been quite a lot of speculation in the hardcore theoretical nanotechnology and engineering work where you simply set up a local area network between these microscopic robots, some of their arms or communication arms, some transmit power, others transmit force. Think of a colony of ants that can all hold hands together and form into structure. You'd certainly have nodes that would be higher level communications nodes, decision makers. Those decision makers would be telling telling the rest of the army of drones, microscopic drones, what to do and when to do it, so that they could all act as a collective.
So, but I guess the question, and the other question is from where? Where does that come from? Is this go back to, I mean, I'm not asking you to pin you down, but could it come from some other place, some other reality? You were talking about higher dimensions, things of that sort. Is that what we're talking about, or could it just come from somewhere else on Earth in this reality?
For this to have been designed, machined, developed, manufactured by any of the usual suspects from a U.S., from a military research lab or university, the chances of that are just astronomically small. I believe we're decades, if not centuries, from actually building and deploying a network of microscopic robots. In terms of then where do they come from? You have to start to question if some of these extraordinary possible explanations of where did they come from?
Well, we'll pick that up on the other side. And we're also going to get into the mysteries and the developments in cold fusion. Going to hear some interesting audio from a discovery that our guest, the nanoman Chris Cooper, made. Back with more of Jeremy Corbell as well. Paul Revere, take us into the break on Coast to Coast AM.